Morning, everyone. Welcome to the Labor Workplace and Regulated Industries Polar Vortex Committee. Just to lay of the land here, we have one bill before us, and once we get everything set with the bill and the author's amendments and the like, we have some testifiers. We'll divide that up equally between the pros and cons, and we'll leave a good share of time then for member questions. How we're going to proceed this morning. And welcome and everyone. We do have a new page here. Laura, would you like to just stand up and identify yourself and just say a word or two? Very good. Thank you. Welcome. Representative Sundin, would you be so kind as to move approval of the minutes for April 15, 2013? The minutes have been, May 8th. Representative Sundin amends his motion to any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Representative Atkins, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I guess I will move House File 1952 to get before the committee. And I move that House File 1952 be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection, Finance, and Policy. And you have several amendments here. Let me move the first one here, the 814-07-68. Does that satisfy you, Mr. Chair, that we move that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's an author's amendment. Put it in the shape that I'd like to proceed.
Any discussion on that amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. That amendment is approved. And I see you have the A2 amendment. Would you like to move that amendment?
Mr. Chairman, is the A2 amendment, unfortunately that one is not in my packet. Could we perhaps go with the A3 and maybe Laura can grab me a copy of the A2?
Okay, let's move the A3 amendment. Anything you want to say about that? Or
it's just a clarifying amendment, Mr. Chairman. It's an author's amendment to put it in the shape that I'd like to proceed. And again, it, just to clarify that it applies to purchased new phones, not resold phone.
Very good. Any discussion, members? Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
A motion prevails. That amendment is approved. And now do you have the A2?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chairman. And the A2 also is an author's amendment just designed to clarify that this applies to smartphone devices.
And I'll move that one as well. Any discussion?
Sure.
Hearing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. That amendment is approved as well. So I think we have the bill in the shape that we wanted. Mr. Chair, if you want to proceed then with explaining your bill.
Mr. Chairman, smartphone theft in this in Minnesota and across the country is an epidemic. And it's not a term that I throw around lightly. It's a growing problem. It's increasing in violence. The numbers literally will startle you. Literally more than one in three robberies from across Minnesota and across the country now involves the theft of a smartphone. And they are growing in their violence in terms of how they're occurring. So when we talk about it being an epidemic, it's not just that it's the robbery, it's the fact that it involves a growing amount of violence and a threat to public safety as well. And you'll notice some folks in uniform and some people have been impacted by this sort of crime. Will tell you about their stories and about the sort of epidemic that it has become. The nice thing about this epidemic is that there is a cure. It is the kill switch feature. It's cheap, it's effective, it works, and it's simple. What is a kill switch? There's usually three questions with people. It sounds like a very daunting kind of thing when you talk about a kill switch. There's three questions that people ask. First, what is it? Second is, how does it work? And then, why is it effective? First off, what's a kill switch? Very simply put, it can take a number of different forms, but what it does is it takes this device, this $500 or however much device this is worth, several hundred dollar device, and as a result, if your cell phone is stolen from you, you literally go on your home computer or you contact your provider, and they can kill the device. They can literally take this $500 device and turn it into a fancy paperweight, or a brick, as some people would put it. As a result of that, what it does is it dramatically decreases the incentive for people to steal these devices. There are, as I said, there's a number of different versions. Apple has their version. There's others that are exploring a variety of options. So when you hear these concerns about it's a hacker's dream, I agree, it probably would be if it was the exact same version on every single device. There's probably some 17-year-old in the Ukraine that would be able to figure out how to get at all of them at the same time. The fact is all of the various companies are very competitive business. I expect that they would develop, and already there's some apps that are available to try to do this. But my suspicion, my expectation, is that they would all find their own varying version of how best to carry it out with their particular operating system, their particular device. And as a result, it certainly would not be a so-called hacker's dream. Minnesota, Mr. Chairman, would be the first state in the country to pass this law. We're literally the first state in the country to hold a hearing on this law. And not coincidentally, Mr. Chairman, yesterday, both T-Mobile and Verizon announced that, in fact, they are going to seek to install kill switches. They're working with their operating system folks and the manufacturers to do exactly that. And I applaud them for doing so. In fact, I would now call upon our friends at AT&T and Sprint to follow the lead of Verizon and T-Mobile, as well as there was another company as well, C-Spire, I believe is the name of the third. There's a number of providers out there. For those that have already stepped up and done it, I applaud their doing so. This is, Mr. Chairman, as you know well, having carried legislation in the past, this is how the industry oftentimes moves. There's a public outcry, there's a concern that's raised, in this case an epidemic that threatens public safety, and as a result it motivates motivates lawmakers, it motivates the companies themselves to follow suit and make the changes that are necessary to be made. Mr. Chairman, with that, we've got a number of testifiers that I think will be much more interesting to hear from than me. And I'm not certain what order they'd like to come in, other than I know that the Minneapolis City Council President, who I believe was on her way to join us, did have another meeting she was trying to get to. I don't know that she's been able to join us yet. I also want to, before we get underway with testimony, I want to thank folks from CTIA, which represents the wireless industry. They brought in representatives. The fact that they are here is very, very meaningful for them to come to Minnesota to talk about this legislation. They've already been in my office yesterday. Representatives of the industry have been talking to me about, I think we're all in agreement that we want to address this problem. It's recognized as a significant problem, and I specifically want to thank them for taking the time to come here and testify about this bill. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure what order, but we do have a nice lady that just gave me the thumbs up. So
very good. Thank you, Chair Atkins, for presenting the bill, and we'll move right on to the pro-testifiers. And someone's coming up to the table here. Welcome. If you would tell us your name for the record.
My name's Kate Cavett, and I'm a proud citizen of the city of St. Paul, our capital city. And a little over a year ago, I was doing some community work. I had asked a young professional man to meet me, and his car wasn't working because we were in November, I believe. And so I said I would pick him up on the east side of St. Paul, and I called a retired police officer to say, where can I meet on the east side? I live near the Capitol. And he suggested McDonald's. So I picked him up, we drove to McDonald's, we talked for about an hour, and then I asked him to review some materials that I had. And so I'm not staring at him. I'm sitting there very nicely just reading my Kindle. I mean, you know, the Kindle app is one of the greatest things that we have on our smartphones. I was aware while we were talking that there were some young men in the booth behind us. And because of some of my previous experiences, I was aware that activity was going on, but I was trying not to pay attention to them. I had carefully put my purse and my briefcase on the inside by the window, but at this point, I'm just very relaxed, sitting here reading my Kindle, not paying a lot of attention to them. All of a sudden, somebody comes up from behind me, takes my Kindle. He's run out the door, and when the man I'm meeting with realizes it, he jumps up to chase him. His iPhone was sitting on the table, and somebody reached over from over the booth behind him and took his iPhone as well. You know, it's been years since I felt so violated. I love my city. It's important for me to feel that it's safe to be in my city of St. Paul. And I had no idea that I needed to be so careful about this device that is so important. It's got all my contacts. It has all my calendar on it. I mean, I was able to go home and turn it off so that my material wasn't easily accessible. But when St. Paul's Finest showed up, they said, oh, yes, this is an epidemic that we have in St. Paul. And young people are stealing phones all the time. It's easy to steal them. You know, you're the perfect victim. You didn't do anything to protect your phone. And now, when I'm going out, if I'm waiting for somebody, I mean, even in the doctor's office, I'm nervous about, I need to hold on to my phone really carefully because I don't want it stolen again. I can't afford to have it stolen. You know, thank goodness. I mean, the angels were with me. I only had to wait 10 days until I was eligible for a new phone, or I would have been spending $600.
Well, thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mr. Schmidt, are you around? Come on down to the table, if you would, please. Welcome, and again, if you just identify yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mike Schmidt. I'm a junior at the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities, studying finance in the Carlson School of Management. Outside of my studies, I serve as the student body president, representing over 30,000 undergraduates that live, study, and work on the U of M campus and in the surrounding neighborhoods. I want to thank the committee for welcoming me here today to speak on this important issue. Crime and safety are the issues that I hear most about on campus. Most students have been personally affected by this issue. Many students are victims or are friends of victims. It's no surprise students are being targeted. A typical student might carry $2,000 worth of property, including laptops, tablets, and cell phones. These device-motivated thefts are not just a local phenomenon. Nationally, 1 in 3 thefts involve a cell phone. I've personally been the victim of a break-in. This past September, I walked into my house to find my items strewn all across the room and found that my roommate's laptop and cell phone had been stolen out of our house when we weren't home. Students in the university have been working together to respond quickly and cohesively to this issue. From day one, safety of students has been the number one priority for the Minnesota Student Association, the undergraduate student government at the university. To that end, students and the university have partnered to create a comprehensive safety awareness campaign, expand access to our Safe Walk and Safe Ride Gopher Chauffeur service, and reach out to the City of Minneapolis to request much-needed enforcement and prevention resources. While these steps have been positive and are already creating positive long-term impact, the incentive for criminals to target students and the broader community still remains. We need to take long-term steps to remove the incentive to target students, kill switch being one of those steps. Changes in university and student behavior won't be the singular solution to the issue. Even with behavior change and stepped-up prevention and enforcement measures, students will still be targets for these items. We have an opportunity to make a sweeping change by making the kill switch standard. By rendering a phone inoperable and eliminating the incentive for theft, we can put a significant dent in the allure of stealing smartphones. Although some phones offer this feature, we won't make a significant dent in crime unless criminals understand that it is universal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt, for coming down. Thank you for your testimony. I think I saw Council President Barb Johnson here. Welcome. And if you would identify yourself, President Johnson, and we'll go from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Barbara Johnson, Minneapolis City Council President, and I so appreciate being able to talk to you today and thank Representative Adkins for his initiative on what is a very, very serious issue in the city of Minneapolis. You know, we've had a very high-profile interest in what has gone on at the University of Minnesota, and I've been involved in the work that's being done to try and address the issues there. But this, of course, is a problem across our city. And I represent part of North Minneapolis. And, you know, my constituents, when the press raised about the University of Minnesota, just said, well, my goodness, you know, this is happening all the time in our community. And it really is the case. When we look at smartphones across the city, the largest number are stolen in our downtown. And we hear stories of people on our Nicollet Mall who are walking, you know, with their cell phones and have them stolen. And I think the it's one thing to have a piece of property stolen, but it frequently is accompanied by pushing someone down. And we all know, you know, or forcibly grabbing it from someone's arm. A friend of mine just was on a bus, had one taken on a Metro Transit bus as he was coming into downtown. So it's a forcible crime. People can be hurt. People are hurt. And I just think we have a responsibility when a huge percentage of the robberies that occur in our community, around 40%, are these smartphones because they have value. And this legislation attempts to take away that value, take away the lucrative part of the crime. And I appreciate that effort, and I applaud the state for being in the forefront of addressing, which of course, what is a nationwide problem. So thank you very much, and appreciate your attention to this matter.
Thank you, Council President Johnson. And did you have something you wanted to add, sir?
Yes, Mr.
Go ahead and identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, good morning. Assistant Chief Matt Clark, Minneapolis Police Department. And there's a couple other items that we want to discuss related to law enforcement on this bill. Last summer, I was at the White House on an invitation from the Attorney General with major city chiefs and mayors concerning juvenile diversion programs. One of the specific items they talked about on a national level was the problem with cell phone theft and robbery as it relates to getting juveniles to go down the right path. And we're seeing that on a national level, where in D.C. and New York City, we're seeing a 40% theft level for all of theft is related to cell phones. And in Minneapolis, that's the same number. We're seeing, unfortunately, 40% or more of our thefts and robberies are related to cell phones. One of the things we're asking with the support of this bill through the city and the police department is that we continue to effectively work with the industry and policymakers on other strategies. We know that we're not sure about the total effectiveness of the kill switch, but naturally, that will reduce, in our opinion, reduce the number of thefts that we're seeing within the city and in the state.
Very good. Thank you. Thank both of you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And Mr. Hessness, are you here? Come on down, sir. Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Sure, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm Greg Hessness. I'm the police chief at the University of Minnesota. And I really I appreciate the opportunity to speak in support of Representative Adkins' bill. I also want to just comment that I appreciate the leadership of the legislature and the welfare of University of Minnesota students. It's our top priority, as is for President Kaler. So great note was taken of the increase in robberies of University of Minnesota students this past fall. on campus, but predominantly in surrounding neighborhoods. So while increases in the fall are somewhat predictable in a variety of activities, last fall the increase was 27% over the five-year average. There are other factors that were of concern as well at that time. As has been mentioned, it was the display of firearms, at least 50% of the cases, and the actual use of force, not just the threat of force, that there were multiple victims and there are also multiple attackers in many cases, and that cellular smartphones were some or all of the loss in the vast majority of the cases. As the university responded in a variety of ways, enforcement, of course, working with Minneapolis police, but also with transit and sheriff's office, we put in hundreds of hours of overtime and on duty, off duty. We worked plainclothes uniform details. We made multiple arrests for robbery, weapons, warrants, and other offenses. And that included an interrupting robbery assault at 2 a.m. on New Year's morning just off campus. So we believe we've sent a message that committing robberies by predators in the campus neighborhood is not risk-free, and we'll continue that. Secondarily, as Mike mentioned, education is a big part as well. We've got a strong partnership with student government, Minnesota Student Association, DAPSA, and who are engaging students to help reduce their own risk. But you know, unlike a municipality, at least a quarter of our constituents turn over every year. So it really is a continuous effort in education and risk reduction. We've also been encouraging our students who do, the majority of whom live off campus, get involved in block clubs and community building activities that the city provides. We've worked on our environment on campus, lighting improvements, adding lighting to key corridors, improving our public area surveillance, improving building control through technology and policy, and improving transportation options for students. And fourthly, we've been involved in engagement to the focus off campus, held many public forums to raise the safety issue, working with city government, business, and particularly all of our new property owners on physical safety enhancements and communication. And having said all that about these strategies, there's still plenty of room for innovation. And ultimately, I believe the kill switch bill is about risk reduction. We've been tracking the campus area robberies since the 1st of September, and in 62% of the cases, cell phone, smartphone has been the sole or part of the loss. And I believe Representative Atkins and others have quoted that 1 in 3 nationally. So near to a campus, it's roughly double that. And if we have a Big Ten law enforcement organization, I can tell you that is a similar statistic in other Big Ten campuses. Offenders presume, with good reason, that college students are normally in possession of a valuable, readily disposable cellular phone or smartphone. For that reason, I believe the kill switch device legislation would greatly undermine the profit motive for individuals in these crimes. So ultimately, that would reduce the risk of victimization for our students and keep them safe. So we are in support.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony. Appreciate it very much. Members, that concludes for now the pro side on this particular bill. What we're going to do next is take the con, and then after that, we'll open up the questions from members of the committee. So I see we have a couple people from CTIA. Maybe both of you want to come up and have a seat. That might be the most efficient way to proceed. Welcome the two of you to the committee, and you can kind of decide how you want to use your time and maybe explain what CTIA is and identify yourself for the record, and go ahead.
Absolutely. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jamie Hastings. I'm with my colleague John Marino, and we are both from CTIA, the Wireless Association. We represent over 200 members, and they are from all various aspects of the wireless ecosystem, including wireless service providers, manufacturers, and those who operate wireless systems. And we want to thank you for allowing us to speak to you this morning about this most important issue. We have met with Representative Atkins, and I want to applaud him as well as this committee, because we believe that while we may differ on the solution, and while we may be concerned about this particular bill, I think we all share the same goal. It's just a question of how to get there. So we talk about education, and it's forms like these that are very, very helpful, because we believe that the solution for law enforcement needs to be a holistic one, one that is layered. And one of those key components is consumer awareness, consumer responsibility, consumer education. So we've taken that very, very seriously at CTIA, and our members have as well. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about an agreement that the wireless service providers came to voluntarily with the FCC, and indeed members of law enforcement agencies across the country. And it was back in April of 2012 that there was an agreement about a couple of things. And the first one was consumer education and consumer awareness. We at CTIA developed a public service announcement, and we've even spoken to Representative Atkins about assistance from his good offices, as well as yours, to encourage broadcasters to run that public service announcement. We also developed a website, beforeyoulooseit.org, and that has not only the public service announcement, but tips for consumers about how they can protect their smartphones. And then finally, most recently, we developed these business-size cards. We are sending them out to law enforcement agencies across the country. We've sent them out to over 20 police departments here in Minnesota, and we owe a lot of them to the University of Minnesota, and we will make sure, sir, that you get these. These are, again, meant to raise awareness, deter smartphone theft now, know your surroundings, use PINs and passwords, add apps to locate, lock, and erase, save backups of personal information. If your smartphone is lost or stolen, report it to police and your provider. Remotely lock, remotely locate, remotely erase. So this consumer awareness is something that we want to continue. And again, we appreciate the opportunity to come to forums like this and raise that awareness. The second part of what the wireless service providers in the United States agreed to was that they would link into a global, international database. Think of it as a blacklist. You may or may not know that each and every one of your smartphones has what's called an IMEI. It is a unique identification number, much like your VIN number for your automobile. And the GSMA, which is an international association that we work with on many issues, and many of our members are members of that association as well, but their scope is global. They developed a database where a lost or stolen phone would, once you report it to your provider, it's then put on this database or this blacklist. So the U.S. wireless service providers agreed to become part of that IMEI database. It was fully implemented for 4G and LTE phones at the end of November, so candidly, it's relatively new. We are encouraging law enforcement, and particularly here in Minnesota, and we've also spoken to the sponsor of the bill about that as well, to get access to that database. Again, another sort of tool in their toolbox, if you will. And what essentially happens is, if I steal John Marino's phone, and it was Sprint phone. I'm not showing favoritism, Patrick. We like all our members just all the same. And then I took that phone to Verizon, and John had reported it to Sprint and said, my phone is lost or stolen. They put it on the database. I take that phone to Verizon. That will automatically come up on the database as having been lost or stolen. Verizon will not activate that phone. Again, we are encouraging folks in the U.S. law enforcement agencies to access those databases, and I ask you to help us with that, because we think that, again, that's an important tool. One of the other things that we want to make sure that you understand is that there are applications out there that are available today on all of the various operating systems. By our count, there are more than 30 different applications that wireless consumers can download to remotely lock and locate and erase their devices. And again, the information that we're providing to consumers does encourage them to do so. John Marino is our Vice President of Technology and Cybersecurity, and he is the technical person. Sponsor smiling at me because he knows that I'm not. But we do know, and John's going to talk a little bit about the specific technological concerns that we have about the bill, but we do see that there are also some unintended consequences. For example, the FCC requires that every wireless device, whether it has service or not, it's considered an uninitialized handset, you must deliver the 911 calls, no matter what. So if you go and you pick up a phone and it doesn't even have any service, the wireless service provider is in that area is responsible to deliver that phone to the closest PSAP. Well, we're concerned that under this bill, as it stands right now, that would not be possible. So there would be a conflict with federal rules. But in addition, it is entirely possible that a person could report their phone lost or stolen. That phone would be rendered inoperable, and then suddenly they find it and they need to contact 911. So we are concerned about that. And then finally, I want to touch upon the state-by-state issue that we have. Congress has recognized that the wireless industry functions on a national basis. Our call centers are handled nationally. Our contracts are national. Just about everything that these companies do and the efficiencies that they provide and that inure to the consumers at lower costs is because they function nationally. We are very concerned that if we start to see state-by-state regulation, that this will cause problems, not only for our members, but most importantly for the consumers. We know that our wireless consumers are pretty savvy, but we don't want them to be confused when they cross a state border and purchasing a phone and what that experience is going to look like, how different it's going to be. It is most important that even these savvy wireless consumers know what they're getting state by state, know that they're operating and getting services by national companies. So in closing, I want to thank you for your time. I really do appreciate, and everyone at CTIA and all of our members appreciate the opportunity to talk about this most important issue, and we want to work together with you to give law enforcement, both here in Minnesota and across the country, the tools that they need to address this problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hastings, for your testimony. Ms. Marino, identify yourself. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is John Marino, and I really appreciate the opportunity to focus on the technical aspects of the bill. And by way of background, I am CTIA's Vice President for Technology and Cybersecurity. I'm an engineer and I work with CTIA's Cybersecurity Working Group to help the industry formulate best practices, share innovations in technology and security, and collaborate with policymakers. I've worked on wireless technology for over 30 years and spent more than two decades at Bell Laboratories. CTIA and our members share your concerns about mobile device theft. which is why we're leading with industry efforts to work together to combat it, the existing solutions and consumer education. As Jamie indicated, we're looking to work with you to address the legal and policy issues, but I've reviewed the proposed bill and the amendments and determined that there are two fundamental technical problems that make it unworkable and will have unintended consequences for causing harm to consumers. First and foremost, the industry has expertise in device and network design. We have a diversity of solutions available for remote device locking and wiping. As Jamie indicated, there are over 30 companies that offer solutions today, and we're constantly refining them to respond to threats that are dynamic and ever-changing. Unfortunately, there is no silver bullet in this space. In a very dynamic and rapidly changing threat environment, bad actors quickly develop ways to circumvent a mandated solution because it represents a large and accessible target. Technical mandates like those in HF 1952 will stifle innovation and ultimately hurt consumers. Second, HF 1952 will interfere with federal efforts to strengthen cybersecurity, which includes mobile devices and networks. In fact, HF 1952 may run the risk of undermining security. As with any software or interactivity between the network and the device, this kill switch is not impregnable, and focusing the industry on one technical solution increases the risks of exploitation. As we've seen reported, hackers and cyber criminals are very sophisticated and adept at evolving their threat techniques to circumvent protection solutions. It is this dynamic that places the security as a top priority for the wireless industry and drives a constant evolution and broad diversity of technology and solutions to stay ahead of the bad guys. This bill and its amendments will have unintended consequences for consumer. For example, the broad definition of smartphone and any mobile device with an undefined mobile operating system can cover a wide variety of mobile devices, not just smartphones. It may require the redesign of products from feature phones to e-readers and perhaps even smart meters. Meeting HF 1952's mandates could drive up costs and make out-of-state purchases more attractive. And because HF 1952 puts the carriers on the hook for ensuring all phones have a kill switch, it may discourage them from connecting their networks to phones that they did not sell, limiting portability and limiting competition. If mandates pop up in other states, different kill switch functionalities may not be identical in operation, causing consumer confusion. But most troubling is the bill's likely harm to public safety, as Jamie mentioned, as people may be prevented from using killed devices to reach 911 emergency services. Fundamentally, the bill rests on a misunderstanding of wireless networks and devices. Devices communicate with networks through radio signals, but HS 1952 assumes that a device can kill itself, or that a network can disable a phone even when the phone is turned off or when it lacks network connectivity. HF 1952 envisions that once a phone's core functionality is rendered inoperable and wiped of all user data, it can easily be reanimated to its former state. The wording of the bill is technically flawed, and the operations required by 1952 are not possible using the software, hardware, and radio networks available today. The bill's kill switch mandate and vague or missing definition reveal its flaws. Allow me to highlight some of those flaws. Subdivision 2 dictates that the kill switch be designed to render the device's core functionality inoperable based upon the amendments that I've seen. The question becomes, what constitutes core functionality is unclear and undefined. Smartphones have numerous functions, some critical to user expectations, others critical to operation, processing, and communication. Carriers and manufacturers will not know if this means both hardware and software, as well as whether such functions as calling 911 in an emergency are rendered inoperable. Subdivision 2B1 dictates that the kill switch wipe all user data. It is unclear whether user data refers to, for instance, email, pictures, contact lists, or also includes passwords, application user data, and other security-related user information stored at firmware or software levels. Either way, unless data is backed up somewhere, the consequences for consumers are unpleasant. Someone locating the smartphone after a search may be unhappy when email, pictures, and videos are gone, but even assuming a wipe is reversible because data is saved to the cloud, for instance, a device may need to be sent to the carrier or manufacturer for reprogramming, assuming that all the user data has been wiped. Subdivision 2B2 again mandates that any smartphone be able to render its core functionality inoperable. The meaning of core functionality is again unclear. Carriers and manufacturers will want to know if this means that the device is unable to turn on, or whether device circuits that may be part of the device's core functionality must be fused and damaged in the process. Whatever is the precise meaning, again, interoperability would seem to preclude 911 calls. Subdivision 2B3 mandates that the kill switch prevent the device from being reactivated with a passcode or similar authorization. This is problematic. A dummy code such as 0000 might comply, but would be insecure. Or consumers may have to remember yet another password, a series of long random codes. And if all user data, including passcode security, were already wiped, the device would not be able to recognize a validation code. Presumably, validating the code and effectuating reactivation would require assistance from the service provider, the manufacturer, or both. And even if it were possible to fully protect the device from reactivation, forcing such airtight hardware locking may be a step backwards. Many vendors provide the ability to unlock devices and replace operating systems entirely. HF 1942 may encourage a return to handset locking. Subdivision 2B4 requires a kill switch to be reversible. This is unclear. Must it be reversible immediately or after reprogramming of the passcode or requisite passcodes? And who will do the reprogramming? Consumers may find it difficult, but if done by the carrier or the manufacturer, it may require considerable time and expense. Immediate reversibility implies that not all user data was wiped from the device, while reversibility by the carrier or manufacturer implies regular mandatory data storage and retention in the cloud in a case a device is stolen. This is expensive, and consumers may object to having the data forced to the cloud for the purposes of reanimating a device. These are just some of the bill's flaws. I urge you to reconsider HF 1952. The wireless industry should be able to continue working with consumers, law enforcement, and policymakers to innovate and address mobile device theft. And indeed, we take this question very, very seriously and are stand ready to help in any way that we can. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Well, thank you for your testimony, and please stick around. I suspect some folks might need some have questions or clarifications, that sort of thing. I know we have one more opponent, and if that person would come on up, Anton Baker. You folks can have a seat. CTIA folks, have a seat out there and let Mr. Schieffer up. We'll take this last testimony and then move the questions from members after this.
Okay. I promise to be brief.
Go ahead and identify yourself.
My name is Anton Schieffer, and I want to clarify something that I'm here as a private citizen and not as a representative of Lucidata, where I'm a security researcher. So, members of the committee, thank you for granting me the opportunity to testify regarding Bill HF 1952 today. I believe this bill was drafted with the best of intentions, but the unintended consequences are too dangerous to ignore. As I outlined in my commentary piece for the Star Tribune, this bill aims to create a new technology. Regardless of the intent, at its core, this new technology has a single purpose, and that is to disable mobile communications devices. Due to the limitations of telecommunications infrastructure, it is a fact that this kill switch technology can and will be wielded by those who may not be held accountable for their actions. By their design, cell phones will communicate with just about any tower they encounter, regardless of whether that tower is operated by AT&T or a hobbyist in his or her garage. As cellular technology continues to mature, the cost of equipment necessary for building one's own cell phone tower declines. This kill switch technology should not be easily deployed by either hobbyists or government agencies who operate so-called kingfish devices. The best way to prevent these scenarios is to stop the creation of such a technology in the first place. There are better ways to tackle the problem of cell phone thefts than through the creation of this kill switch technology. While I'm not an expert on such matters, the creation of a multi-carrier database for stolen cell phones has been met with some success in European countries, and I believe the creation of a similar database has been mandated by the FCC and enabled in the United States during the past year. So I urge the members of this committee to reject HF 1952. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schieffer, for coming down as a private citizen and sharing your testimony. Members, we're going to move on to the question asking time. So as you have questions, and I know most of the testifiers are still here and available to answer as well as questions. from members? Representative Benson.
Thank you, Chairman Johnson. It might require that we bring some of the folks back up. I have a number of questions, actually, so I'll try to keep them brief, but many of them were answered. I had some questions about the 911 calls. I know that phones can be currently donated to women's shelters and charitable programs and the like. You know, how would that change, and, you know, would the change make that impossible, you know, for that to continue? I'll let you answer that one. I don't know if that's a technical question that you can answer. Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the question. No, you could still donate your phone.
Okay, so the
Representative Benson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Representative Atkins. So we'd still be able to do that. The kill switch wouldn't be deployed in that case. It would just be a matter of I'm moving on to a newer model, and I can donate my old phone to the charitable organization that would like to have it for just that purpose.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have some concerns about, you know, with the latest hacking into Target and a number of, you know, just, I guess, the reliability in terms of being able to guarantee. I have a real concern that if we have a state or even eventually a national policy that would allow for this. It's a two-part question, so I'll ask, first of all, is this a simple patch to an operating system that could be deployed, or is this is it going to be a hardware fix?
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Benson, the bill does not prescribe what they need to do relative to whether it needs to be hardware or software. The point of it was to not stifle any sort of innovative approaches to it, but rather just describe the key pieces that need to happen. And then, as we've seen yesterday with Verizon and T-Mobile stepping up and announcing themselves that they intend to pursue some version of a kill switch, just like prior to them, Apple has done their own version. In fact, if I might take a little latitude here, one of the critiques of this was that, you know, we hadn't addressed some of the technical issues. There is actually an amendment, I think it was put in your packets, to start to address some of those technical concerns that have been raised, but it was brought by one particular company, and some of the other companies said, well, it favors, gives them a competitive advantage over us. In light of that competitive element to it, or the concern about competitive advantage being created, we thought that that probably best be addressed in the Commerce Committee. So we're not ignorant of the potential technical issues. It's just in light of the concern that was raised, I think we're going to take up some of those concerns in the Commerce Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That leads me to say there is market solutions. Here we are heavy-handed as government trying to do it, but there are market solutions to it, and honestly, if we had that kind of crime increase, I would think as consumers we begin to look for solutions through the market. But nevertheless, so I'll you know, I've only researched it a little bit, but it would seem that if we're going to protect smartphones that people already own, it's going to have to be a software patch. So, I mean, they periodically come out with, I know that the iOS system just had a latest patch because they found a glaring hole in security of their own software. My real problem with this, especially when it becomes national, I would assume that if there is going to be legislation that ultimately addresses this, that would be national, not state by state, because I can imagine how much difficulty we're going to get with every state adopting some similar or but not exactly the same solution. Would be the ability for someone, I'm not a black helicopter kind of guy, but the fact that, you know, we have folks that don't like us that could hack into the system and suddenly render our mobile system virtually inoperable by deploying the kill switch. And with the way the bill's written right now and the testimony that we got from the industry experts, it would seem that it would take a lot to turn this phone back on. And, you know, so suddenly emergency responders and folks who maybe rely on cells, and I know they have different systems, but a lot of times in the hinterland we still call each other by cell phones as an alert to it. What that might do, and if indeed that would be a potential problem, Again, I just go back to what just happened to Target and the millions of dollars and the consumers that were impacted by it. I just worry about the potential ramifications of someone who doesn't like us suddenly going, well, we're going to flip the switch, and suddenly we have a national problem or a regional problem until it becomes a national bill. Can you address that?
Representative Benson, I was sure hoping you'd say that at the end, because I was afraid that that was just a speech and then we move on to the next question. First off, is I absolutely share the concern. And if it was a one-size-fits-all demanding the same fix on every phone across every operating system across every carrier, I'd share your concern as well. That's not how this industry works. I mean, we saw it literally just yesterday with T-Mobile and Verizon taking it on themselves, perhaps on the eve of this hearing, and I don't think that's just purely by coincidence that they decided to do that. But I can't imagine that those two competitors, and it is one of the most vibrant competitive ecosystems, as Ms. Hastings likes to call it, that I've ever seen. I mean, these folks, they eat each other's lunch. I mean, they really are seeking to establish what they can do for their customers. So I completely agree and I can't imagine that they would adopt the same sort of fix. By the way, one technical note, by the way, is the A2 amendment said it only applies to new phones. So we wouldn't be going back and patching old phones. There's Samsung, just one example, has a hardware approach to this that they offered to two of the companies that was rejected a few months ago. I'm hoping now that perhaps they'll take them up on that offer. But I couldn't agree with you more, and I think Senator Klobuchar would agree. We would love to have there be a national solution. And I suspect the folks at CTIA and all the carriers would probably tell you the same thing. You remember Kelsey Smith? Kelsey Smith, Representative Johnson probably remembers Kelsey Smith. Kelsey Smith is, let me see if, I don't know how good your eyes are, folks. This is Kelsey Smith. I tell you about Kelsey Smith because on June 2nd, 2007, she went to Target. She was shopping, wanted to buy her boyfriend a present, and she disappeared. Some hours went by and her parents couldn't find her, so they called up the cell phone carrier and they said, can you ping her cell phone? Tell us where she is. They said, no, we won't do that. A day went by, they called again, cell phone company said, no, we won't do that. A couple more days went by, the police called the wireless carrier and said, you know, ping her cell phone, we need to find her, she's missing. And the cell phone carrier said, no. 4 days finally went by. And the cell phone carrier said, okay, we'll ping her cell phone. They found her body within 45 minutes. I tell you that story because Minnesota was the second state that passed a law saying that under emergency circumstances where imminent public safety is in jeopardy, a cell phone carrier contacted by law enforcement needs to ping the location of that cell phone to find the person. It happened in Kansas, it happened in Minnesota, happened in six other states after that, happened in three Canadian provinces. Didn't happen nationally. It was stuck at the national level. It just couldn't make any headway. Finally, after eight states and three or four Canadian provinces passed it, the industry stepped up and they all did it. Some of them were doing it already, just like Verizon and T-Mobile are doing this. But sometimes they need a little bit of a push. So Representative Benson, I'd suggest we keep our gas, our foot firmly on the gas pedal on this until the other big carriers step up and do the same thing, and we can prevent things like what happened to Kelsey Smith and what's happening in 60% of the cases at the University of Minnesota and in Council President Johnson's neighborhood and in schools and malls across Minnesota.
Chairman, just follow up and just follow-up comment, one more question.
Okay, because we have others on the list.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it. And my worry is that we're pushing it through pretty quickly, and I think there's a lot of questions to still be answered. Answer the question in terms of the marketplace and the varying ways that this will be. It's proprietary. I'm assuming that they'll come up with a way that will protect their phones. But we have four major carriers in the United States. So if Verizon's 50% of the market in Minnesota and they're the ones to be hacked, we still have a lot of phones that will be rendered unusable if we're not careful. So that my technology thing, I would just want last one, and this is to the industry, and I understand the this is simply just a matter of raising questions and get them answered, trying to get them answered. But you know, there's all kinds of commercials where folks purposely damage their phones. You know, they're making light of the fact they got an old phone, the crystals broke, this one guy's got his fingers all bloodied up and so on, can't get out of his plan and so on. Has there been discussions about and around the risk to the carriers who eventually can do no less than just to, you know, pass this on to the consumer, of people going, oh, my phone was stolen, and you know, and that was, and not that they can't do it now, but now we're making it even, you know, seemingly more public about it, and I want the latest model. I mean, is that being considered at all in terms of the legislation? Again, the same thing can happen now if you don't have an insurance plan, but I'm wondering if you've given any thought that this may make it a little bit easier for them to do that, too.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, this would have no impact on that. It's already an issue. It's already a crime, and this wouldn't have any impact on making it any easier for people to do it.
Thank you
for the question. Yeah.
Representative Kiefer.
Mr. Chair. Happy New Year. I'm going to bring it more local because, and you're on Commerce as well, so I'm sure you've already got an answer for me. But, you know, being on the border of Woodbury and Hudson, and now we've just opened, you know, we had a grand opening for the AT&T store in Woodbury a couple months ago. How is this going to impact the Minnesota versus the places where they can go interstate? And is, because I see this bill potentially increasing costs for the provider, and then this can be passed on the consumer. So if the consumer can get a better deal in Hudson, I just hate to see us keep pushing jobs over the border. So can you address that for me, please? Thank you.
Representative Atkins.
And Ms. Chair and Representative Kiefer, I appreciate the question very much, because my understanding is that Samsung was looking to install it for free. And number two is, in terms of where people might want to buy their new device, their new smartphone device, my suspicion is they'd actually want to buy it here in Minnesota. So you might have Wisconsinites coming across the border to buy something with this protection on it so that they don't need to worry about what's happening at the university and at to Ms. Cabot in St. Paul and in schools and at the Mall of America. Thank you for the question.
Representative Hugo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, after the industry technical expert has testified with all the technical problems with this bill, I was wondering what your take was on that.
Representative Atkins?
Mr. Chair and Representative Yukum, I appreciated his. In fact, I asked as they were leaving, I asked for him to share the comments. We did have one of the amendments in your packets was a technical fix to some of those concerns. After it was drafted, of course, we found out that it was would have perhaps created a competitive advantage for a certain company as opposed to others, and so that's best handled in the Commerce Committee. But I assure you that our goal is obviously to, you know, people should still be able to contact 911, for example. They also noted that it may stifle innovation or create lack of security. The whole point of this is to not mandate. I don't think legislators should ever be mandating a particular technological solution, as much as here's kind of what the function is that we're looking for. As the police officers testified, this takes away the incentive. From a public safety standpoint, the idea here is to take away the incentive so people won't steal a phone in the first place. Prevention is worth a lot better than just about anything else we can do. But in terms of how they do it, that's for, you know, folks the technical expert from CTIA and all of his counterparts in the various companies and operating systems and manufacturers. I suspect there's 1,000 different ways that they can do this, and they'll find the one that fits them best.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Well, yeah, I think there is two, and he went through the bill line by line, and there's obviously some very important technical aspects that could be affected by the present form of the bill. I mean, I understand this is a very popular issue, and we need to do something for our university students and other people that have had cell phones stolen. It is a problem and everything else, but now you just mentioned T-Mobile, Apple already has it, Verizon is doing it. Why do we need this bill? It looks to me like industry is moving towards this, and obviously if industry is doing this, they're taking the technological problems that have been exposed in this bill into consideration. If you happen to wait another 6 months or so, it's probably going to take care of itself. Why do we need this right now?
Representative Atkins?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ugham, thank you so much for that question, because until Chairman Johnson announced this hearing 2 weeks ago, Mr. Kwapik, less than 2 weeks ago, it was no, 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 no from every single company. They were absolutely saying it was not going to happen. And on the eve of this hearing, there's an announcement from two big carriers, two of the big four, that say we're going to do it, and one of the smaller carriers as well. So I say just press harder on the gas. And hopefully, in fact, as I said earlier, calling on AT&T and Sprint to do exactly the same thing. As soon as they do and the market responds, I'll put the bill on the shelf.
Representative Ugham, follow up.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because I think we probably, like you say, have raised the awareness of this, and I think it's important. I'd like to see this bill put on the shelf. I really would, because I really think the industry and everybody else is going to take care of itself. It's a crying need. There's no question about it. I'm very concerned about the cost. I think the cost to Minnesotans for their cell phones, if this bill goes through, is going to go up quite a bit, and I think we'll be uncompetitive. Let us just let industry do its thing, and if we're pushing them, that's fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we have five more people on the list. The next one is Representative Metsa. You're ready to go?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Atkins. I think this is an important issue. One of the things I was concerned about, which we've already talked about, was the privacy of the user. So I'd encourage maybe a user opt-out at the point of sale. And other than that, I do support you moving the bill forward, and sometimes it does take a little poke in the side to get things going in the right direction. So thank you for your work.
Thank you, sir. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm sorry I'm late. It was a two-hour drive in from the West Metro, well, Buffalo, which is beyond that. So in any case, I apologize, Representative, that I missed some of the testimony, but I think I've been caught up to speed here, and a lot of the questions I had have been kind of answered. I still have quite a bit of concern about hacking, and here's the reason why. My daughter has this 17-year-old friend who actually wrote the software for Motorola, part of it. And that I think that's being launched fairly soon. So, you know, there's a lot of 16, 17, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, as we know out there, that have incredible skill, incredible talent, not just to write the software, but he could also crack into anybody's phone and do anything he wanted with it. So hacking is no longer, you know, a small issue, as we just found out with Target, which I Representative Benson had mentioned. You know, a 19-year-old in Russia literally brought our economy, well, I won't say our economy, I'll say Target's profit to a screeching halt. You know, their stocks fell, everything else. So in listening to the expert testimony, I just have really great concerns. And actually, the gentleman, too, that was a private citizen, and I don't recall what company he works for, but it seems that he's got some expertise in that area as well. He's probably right up there with our top people in the state doing some of the programming and internet security and so on. I just have a tremendous concern of this scenario. So however this is rolled out, if it's rolled out, and according to the testimony here too, it says that there's technical flaws in the bill and that currently, there's not software, hardware, or radio networks available today to enact this. So I'm kind of confused in the testimony if there's people or, you know, industry's already doing it, but then he said that we don't have the technical ability to do it. But in the event that we do have the technical ability to do this, what assurances do we have of hackers coming and basically bringing this to a screeching halt? And here's my thought of, well, if they're I don't know if they're using a cell phone tower or something, and they can disable the entire University of Minnesota system. Maybe every single cell phone at the University of Minnesota can be frozen, killed, wiped clean. What if they did it in this building? What if hackers hacked in? Well, maybe that would be a good thing. I don't know. But, you know, maybe they hacked into our system, and, you know, most of us use Sprint, right? So what if they use these cell phone towers to completely bring us to a screeching halt and wipe out all of our information and killed us? What if they did it at a military base? What if they did it, you know, on and on and on and on? I'm fearful that by enacting this, that you're giving terrorists and just bored kids the ability to really, really mess with our ability to communicate. And, you know, this is my computer now. It's everything, right? So I'm sure everyone in this room uses it for absolutely everything. I barely sit at my computer anymore. So I have a really great concern because I know some really, really smart teenagers that could really mess with us. So can you give us some assurances? Maybe the industry needs to speak to it more than you do, because I can't expect you to know those technical questions, but that would be my question.
Representative Hacken, Hackens, have any thoughts on security hacking?
Representative O'Neill, I have a 17-year-old too, and so I'm very, very thoroughly involved in how hacking can be of an issue. But let me say this. First off, make no mistake, it's already an issue. Whether we pass this bill or not, those same people that are out to get you are still out to get you. In terms of whether or when if it's rolled out, the question now as of less than 24 hours is when it's rolled out. Because Verizon, T-Mobile, CSpire, I suspect others will join them in rolling something like this out. The aim is going to be, and I suspect that that Ms. Hastings from CTIA and the other industry representatives who are represented here in the room are going to take your comments to heart. I've said the same thing. I'm sure everybody else is saying the same thing. Is when you roll this out, because it's no longer an if. When you roll it out, do what Apple is doing. Do what others are doing, which is try to roll it out in as secure a way as possible. Do not roll it out as a single one-size-fits-all. For very obvious reasons, like Representative Benson and Uglem have pointed out already, because then it would have a wider spread effect. But I suspect they've already thought through some of those sorts of issues long ahead of us bringing them up here at the table today.
Very quickly, just to follow up. So, you know, I apologize, I probably missed the beginning of the testimony, but I was under the understanding that in November they rolled out a database so that every single basically model number or whatever, it's kind of like a VIN number in a car, is actually entered into that database, and if you call in and say my phone has been lost or stolen, then it kind of goes on a list where it can't be reactivated. So why is that not the fix?
Representative Atkins?
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill, thank you for the question. The reason why it's not the fix, as I asked Ms. Hastings yesterday, is has China recognized it? The answer is no. And the single largest market right now for these phones and where you can get the most money is in China. If they step up and recognize it, I think that will be helpful, but it won't prevent the crime from happening in the first place. What this does, the point of the kill switch, is to try to prevent it from ever occurring. If you take the incentive away by making it less valuable or no value at all, turning it into a brick, it doesn't get stolen in the first place.
Representative Hoppe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Atkins, we've gone through about an hour of this, and I haven't heard anyone talk about why not increase the penalties on the criminals that are stealing these phones. Why don't we go after the people that are the problem instead of making something potentially more of a hassle for the industry, and they might be doing it anyhow, and people? Have you thought about vastly increasing the penalties and getting people's attention that way?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hoppe, another terrific question. It's not working. The penalties, you can increase them as much as you want to. Right now, I mean, you steal one of these devices, it's $500 or more. You get to a certain, you steal enough of them, you're already at a felony. And we've got cops in the room that'll be able to attest to it better. But we haven't, it's not worked. There's still, it's a one out of every three robberies, and it's growing, and it's becoming more violent. Our criminal penalties, and again, some of these rise to felony-level offenses, just haven't worked yet. And in addition to that, preventing it in the first place is probably better than punishing it afterwards.
Well, Mr. Chair, one quick follow-up. I mean, we're talking about risk reduction. I think if it's widely known that, you know, you're going to have slap on an initial 5-year sentence if you're convicted of a felony with these phones. Risk reduction. And I think that has a lot to do with prevention.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, I appreciate the effort on this. I think it's a little misplaced with what we're looking at trying to do here. And you've used the kind of an auto example or an analogy today where you said, I think we just need to keep the foot on the pedal and keep it going. I kind of see this as an individual who's asking the auto dealers, who are agents to distribute these vehicles, to put a kill switch on a car that's being sold at the dealership. They don't manufacture it. The issues of manufacturing are with the phone manufacturers. And to say to the providers, you need to have a kill switch on your phones, they're not the manufacturers. I think we're one circle away from where this problem needs to be addressed. Again, going into the auto dealer and telling the sales manager or telling the auto dealer, you really just need to get a kill switch in these vehicles. Because I bet you if you ask the Minneapolis police, I tell you, auto theft's a pretty big deal in Minneapolis too. Versus a $500 phone versus a $15, $25, $35, $45, $55, pick your number, $1,000 car. I'd love to have a kill switch in my car and something like that. Well, maybe not in my car, but I know some people who would like to be able to have that. But the point being, I think we're misplacing where it's at. Your testimony today, and you brought it up two or three times, that, boy, on the eve of this hearing, two, three providers have stepped up and said, we're on this. My hunch, knowing business as I do, they were working on this because they can come out with a competitive advantage when they go on their fancy commercials and their glossy flyers and say, if your phone gets stolen, we're the one in the industry that can provide you the service, or others don't. Like, all you did was by that is have these folks tip their hand a little bit from what they're already working on. I think you can shelve the bill right now. You've accomplished what you want to do is raise level of awareness on this. The industry realizes they have a problem. That's why they've got the universal list and the kill process right now that's out there. I think you've already accomplished your mission. I don't know why we need to go any further on this, unless there's going to be another bill that you're going to be bringing up, because it'll go through Commerce as well, that deals with auto dealers getting kill switches on the vehicles that they sell. I'm just kind of curious, maybe some comments or thoughts on that from you.
Representative Atkins, any reflections?
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill, facts or stuff?
It's O'Driscoll, sir.
Who did I call you? Oh, I'm sorry. You know, when you find a good Irish folks, right? Representative O'Driscoll, my apologies. I'm so glad you raised it, because facts are stubborn things. You can't massage them one way. You can't massage them the other. The fact is Samsung, a manufacturer, wanted to do this, offered to do this, and two of the large carriers said no. They didn't want it installed. I don't know why they didn't want it installed. Some critics, some bloggers and so forth have said it's because they make a whole bunch of the carriers and others make a whole bunch of money on insurance. Others have said it's technical issues and they're worried about hackers. Whatever the case may be, there are manufacturers that have desired to do this. And this is a little bit unique in that when you talk manufacturers and you talk providers and the operating systems that they use, in this world, they really do work with one another. So if like the auto dealer, if you've got lots of auto dealers or one that sells a fourth of your products or half of your products, and they come to you and they say, yes, I want a kill switch, or no, I don't, as the manufacturer, good business person that you are, you'd probably respond to what your customer wants. In this case, if it's one of the major providers, AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint, or Verizon, says, I do want it or I don't want it, as a manufacturer, you're probably going to follow that advice. And we do in the bill, by the way, recognize manufacturers as being jointly liable for it. So thank you for the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, I'm still going to go back to your comment on this facts are a stubborn thing. You may have a public position for competitive reasons that you're not interested in doing that at this point, but paddling like a duck under the water to try to get that competitive advantage, because as you pointed out, this is a very competitive industry. I think the quote was, these people eat each other's lunches every day. So if they want to go out and they want to be able to raise that issue and say to their competitors, here's what we're working on, I think they probably want to kind of have that, hey, we're not interested right now, we're not moving forward, but working to try to gain that competitive advantage, because through competition, prices of phones and phone packages and opportunities have gone down since you first started rolling out the cell phone. So that's all the questions and comments I have.
Thank you, Representative. We have two more representatives with questions, I should say, and then we'll move to the vote from there. Representative Simonson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank you, Chair Atkins, for bringing this bill forward. I think this is a great idea, and knowing a little something about the value of prevention, I can really see what you're trying to accomplish here and certainly appreciate those efforts. So thank you for doing that. And I also want to thank you for your strategy in working with business and industry, the advocates and the opponents to this bill. I think that what I've seen here in my short time here is that you've got a good track record of doing that, so I certainly appreciate that. But I do have two specific questions that I think really kind of bring this home to me. But and one is about the installation of this kill switch. I'm trying to wrap my head around what the cost of such a installation might be. I've got to assume that it's relatively low, but I've also got to assume that you've had those conversations. So I'm curious about the cost, and maybe we can just compare it back to what Apple has done and give us a sense of that. And my second question, and you can answer this however you see fit, but you just, in your last comments, you mentioned about insurance premiums or insurance that consumers buy to protect themselves from stolen phones and et cetera, et cetera. And I think with what we're trying to accomplish here with essentially rendering the value of the phone to be nothing to a typical criminal, do you have a sense of what the industry makes on insurance premiums that they charge the consumer? So my two questions, again, are just the cost of the kill switch feature itself, and just give me an idea of how much industry is making on insurance premiums.
Representative Atkins?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Simonson, to the extent that I can comment, and there may be members of the from industry that want to tell you precisely how much they're making on the insurance. Or the, but my understanding on the cost side is that Samsung offered it just as part of the package for the device. Is that they weren't looking for to make additional profits with respect to it, so that the they weren't talking about a higher cost. Secondly, is with respect to the insurance, my understanding is it's tens of millions of dollars in profits that are made as a result. And that's, I believe, shared between the insurance company and the carrier. But again, there may be some of the carriers themselves that want to respond directly and tell you how much they make.
Representative Simonson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Atkins. So if I understand correctly, Samsung, at least one company, has offered to provide this feature for free. So essentially, when we talk about the impact of the consumer and driving up costs, the cost of the installation assumably is going to be zero. Secondly, if you consider the cost of the premiums that the individual consumer pays on a month per month-by-month basis, and the value of that insurance going forward, whether we need it, whether we don't, I've got to assume that there's certainly opportunity here for the consumer to save money as well as improve public safety. So for those reasons, I'd certainly be supporting your bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Fisher?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And once again, I also like to thank Representative Atkins for bringing forward the bill. And I guess as I've taken a look at it, in some ways, to me, it feels like in some ways there's already a kill switch out there that the industry has developed to protect themselves and their profits. When any instance comes up, they're able to turn off somebody's cell phone except for 911 calls. The problem is it's great that they're protecting their services, but there's not much being done to help protect the customers. We've been hearing information that a number of their customers are running into problems with thefts, etc. And all we're doing is asking for a solution here that they would help implement, put on their customers, that would help their customers out going forward, that does not appear to have any costs. And you know, we've heard some discussion about, you know, well, let's build more jails, etc. Well, I know one of the biggest ways to help reduce crime is you make sure there isn't a value on it. So if all of a sudden the value evaporates on a product, you've pretty much solved that kind of problem. Why would somebody steal it and ship it overseas if it has no value? So I think in some ways that goes to a lot of the roots of the solutions, and I know that you're also very good at working with the industry, and if another solution came up that we didn't have to go all the way to the end, that you would be taking care of that. So I commend you for your efforts and continue to encourage you on those ways. Thank you.
Thank you.
President Hoppe?
To that point, or those last couple of points, I know the hour grows late, but do we have anybody from the industry, any of the carriers or CTIA that wants to respond to some of those comments?
They're welcome to it.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Sure, go right up to the microphone, identify yourself again. And
I'm sorry.
Go ahead and comment. James. Go ahead and have a seat and relax.
I'll just kneel down. Okay. Jamie Hastings, CTIA, the Wireless Association. A question came up about the database, and I think that is important. One of the things, the database was just fully implemented at the end of November, so candidly, I think we need to give it some time to work and see if it's effective. But, Chairman, you're absolutely right. China is not on the list. And we are encouraging folks at the federal level, candidly, everywhere we go, to try to get more countries and more carriers in those countries signed up to that database. And we would encourage you in any way that you can, if you can help us do that, we would be happy to work with you, because we recognize that the more global this is and the more countries that are part of the database, the more effective this tool will be. I don't know if there were any other questions that you wanted to pose to the industry. If they're technical, John Marino is going to have to come up here.
Representative Yukon, just briefly.
Just briefly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question for the industry. If you have to make special phones just for Minnesota, is it going to cost more?
I am not aware of a specific analysis. Mr. Chair, I am not aware of a specific analysis with respect to that, but I will tell you that our experience has been, and there are studies that have been done, that absolutely show that if an industry, be it the wireless industry or another industry, is regulated, there are costs associated with that regulation, and those are borne by the consumer. Specific with respect to, you know, this issue, I'm not aware of that specific data, but I do know generally the costs rise.
And Representative Neal, did you have a brief question?
Very briefly. Thank you so much, Chair. Now, it's a good question, because in the testimony that came with your colleague, I have the written testimony in front of me, and he said, the bill is technically flawed, and it's not possible using software, hardware, or radio technology available today. And I'm just confused, because if some industry is moving forward with it, can you just clarify your testimony before us and what that means exactly?
And here comes my statement.
And the second part would just be, I think that you know, and that the enactment date, if I look at it correctly, says January 1st of 2015. So we have just under a year to the enactment, and is that enough time to develop this technology?
Ms. Marino.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With regards to my testimony, my comments with regards to not being able to actually implement the bill as written because of its requirements, and particularly around inoperability and how to recover from and reanimate the phone and all of the things that are entailed in the bill through my technical analysis. That's what that particular comment was directed at. Most of the available solutions that are out there today from approximately 30 different companies and in excess of hundreds of different variants, but all of which, for the most part, some are available for free, some are actually available. They come with a device as part of the device's software, so it's already bundled into the price of the device, but they actually then some have a monthly fee associated with it that the consumer bears, and it varies from company to company. But at the end of the day, they all have the ability to look at how to reverse the locking of the device in such a way that you're not wiping all of the user data that's on the device. And those are some of the intricacies that I was trying to address in the bill.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. We'll move to the final word from Representative Atkins regarding the bill and go from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
In light of the hour, Mr. Chairman, I think you've heard plenty. I appreciate all of the comments from members. I also look forward and would expect that we will get proposed solutions and technical fixes from folks in the industry. I've invited them up until now and have had some, you know, the amendments that you adopted this morning did so. I'd invite them to continue to provide input between now and when it's taken up in the Commerce Committee. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for moving the bill forward.
The Chair renews his motion that House File 1952, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection, Finance, and Policy. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The matter is re-referred to the Committee on Commerce. Members, one last thing before we break for the day. You might have seen the email on Shannon Savick, one of our committee members, and the loss that she experienced. So keep her in your thoughts and give her a kind word when you get a chance to see her. So with that, we adjourn.